Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am honored to share the microphone with really interesting people. They are entrepreneurs, authors, speakers, virtual assistants, web developers, small business owners, fitness experts. These are people who have wonderful stories to share and who are excited to freely share their business wisdom and their tips and their actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. So today I welcome to the show Chaney Weiner. Chaney is a sought-after authority on human potential and personal development. He is the founder of the Chaney Institute of Human Potential, an organization dedicated to empowering people worldwide in all seven areas of life. And those seven areas are financial, physical, family, mental, spiritual, vocational, and social. And he helps them discover their hidden brilliance and uniqueness based on what is most important to them. You would think that this would be intuitive, but trust me, it's not. As an acknowledged transformational leader and a leading expert on success in raising human potential, Chaney has inspired people around the world, sharing his breakthrough methods for personal and professional success. He's often approached by the media for his inspiring insights and advice, and his work has been featured on Montel Across America with Montel Williams, Hollywood Confidential with Lisa Gibbons, Martha Stewart Living Radio, Hay House Radio, and on hundreds of radio shows like this one throughout the world. Chaney, good morning, and welcome to Your Partner in Success.
Well, thank you for having me, and I also want to add this is a little sudden flavor to the show because we're only three states away from each other.
No, you just moved recently, didn't you?
Yeah, to Scottsdale, Arizona, so I'm not too in
state-wise. Well, no, I'm in Louisiana. I'm not in L.A.
Yeah, well, that's still only three states away.
Is it?
Yeah, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona.
Oh, that's right. If you go down through the bottom half, you're right. I totally.
Texas is a big one.
Texas is 3 days if you're driving. I've driven that route. I should have known that.
Yeah, I-10.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So tell people a bit about yourself. You know, did I miss anything in the intro? You've got a very interesting story. Is there something else you would like to share with our audience?
Well, I like the way you covered it, being that that's the truth. But I'll just mention how, well, because you mentioned that I'm a human potential specialist, and really how I got into that was, believe it or not, through fitness. I grew up playing sports. I got into fitness and working out. Ended up personally training people. But the thing was, I liked training people, but there wasn't that love for it, and the reason it wasn't is because I was helping, you know, I was taking people through fitness programs, helping them lose weight, get in shape, and all that. But the thing was, I was always thinking, well, what about the other areas of their lives? Because when a person was coming to me, they were working out in the gym, and I was training them, well, they were bringing the outside stuff in with them. They were what's going on in their relationships, their finances, their friendships, their family, their social network, and just the different areas of life, their spirituality, what do they believe in, their mindset. And the thing was, I didn't really have the opportunity as much to integrate those other areas. The mindset, yes, but that was really about it. So just little by little, I felt, I like doing the fitness, but there's more to it than that. So I ultimately transitioned out of fitness into personal development and to what I'm doing today as a human potential specialist, because it's all about helping people raise their human potential and really discover, like you were saying in the intro for me, their hidden brilliance and their inner magnificence.
You know, I think it's important that we cover all of these different areas. I have kind of the same thing going on in the virtual assistants industry. It's one thing to train people to be a virtual assistant, but they also, because we're humans, they also need to understand what their mindset is, what their quality of life is, you know, what kind of progress are they making on a daily basis in all of the areas that you cover. So it's really kind of a whole mind-body type of attitude that I think more and more people seem to be embracing.
Well, really the thing, you know, really now that I'm just really thinking about it, because I've really been thinking about it more and more, not that I haven't before, but really it comes down to really caring. Because, again, like what you were just saying, in your particular situation dealing with the whole virtual assistant thing, I mean, that's really no different than me training, when I used to train people, it's no different than maybe someone else in another industry helping somebody doing something. They're still bringing those other areas of life to them. Now, while it's understandable that it's, you really can't get into all of it, but it's important to at least look at that in someone's life and to really care enough to acknowledge that, and then depending on your relationship with the person, see how far you can go with that. And like I was saying, with when I was training people with the fitness, it just didn't give me enough of an opportunity to do that. And to me, it's, you know, caring about helping others. The total picture is what counts, all those different areas of life.
That's right. And I think, and I don't know this, it's just kind of a theory that I'm working on, but it seems to me like we have come from, like, sales training. You must be trained. You must do this. You must do that. But it doesn't take into the whole picture. You know, are you actually looking at the other person and saying, you know, I hear what you're saying, but this is kind of what I'm sensing or seeing that you're not telling me. Is there another way that we can be of assistance to you? And I think that is coming more to the forefront than just the hardcore training. Training is important. I'm not discounting it. We do need training. We do need skills. But I think we also need to widen our kind of perspective of what other people are.
Yeah, and along with that caring, since you just brought up about the word hearing, there's a big difference between hearing someone and listening to them.
Listening,
and,
right.
And I actually talk about that briefly in my book, and in terms of appreciating someone, because believe it or not, it's very easy to say, well, you know, to appreciate someone else and to care about them, you know, you have to be the one that talks all the time. Well, guess what? Listening and staying quiet, being in silence, in many cases, is even more powerful than saying something, because that really shows someone that you really care and appreciate them by just taking a step back, listening to them, and understanding where they're coming from. Because their world, they're seeing their world through most likely a different set of eyes than you do.
Oh, yeah. Now, this is going to sound sexist, and I do not mean it to be so. But I'm just going to make that disclaimer straight out of the chute. But I have often found that when a woman is, you know, kind of chatting with a man and saying, you know, I've got this and going on and this, he immediately wants to jump in, not listen, but he wants to fix it. We don't want you to fix it. We just want you to listen. We can probably fix it on our own. We just need a sounding board. Do you find that, or am I just being totally off kilter?
Well, I'm going to say it like this. This is going to sound funny. We're all sexist in a sense, because guys do it and girls do it. They both do it. But I understand where you're coming from. But again, the bottom line is, whether you're, and here's my point, whether you're a guy listening to a gal or a guy listening to a guy, it doesn't matter. It's still two human beings interacting with one another, and it comes down to taking the time to care enough to listen to the other person.
Right.
Because, again, it's not the world according to so-and-so. Each person, you know, there's this quote I have, I think I came up with it, we're all the same, but we're different. We're all the same in terms of the traits that we have within us, whether those are positive or negative traits, but we're different in how we express them. And the same thing is true in listening to someone. And I know it's cliche, I know we've heard it so many times, but it's listening to someone is one of the most, if it's not the most important skill, it's certainly in the top three that any human being could have. And it's just a matter of suspending your own beliefs, taking the time to step back and to hear someone else from their point of view, even if it may not agree with yours.
And I have found, Jay, that when I listen to people, they may say something that I'm just going, oh, I don't think so. I'm wise enough not to say that out loud. But you know what? Upon reflection, and if you're really listening, you will reflect later on, won't you? You can almost go, okay, well, I didn't see it that way the first time I heard it. Let me think about that. And that's the beauty of actually listening, because it then kind of drops itself into your consciousness and you can actually explore it down the road.
Yeah, that's
But if you're reacting, you're not learning a darn thing.
That's really a great point. And in my opinion, and I would have a tendency to pretty much say this, I don't say across the board, but in fact, I'll say it like this. To each person listening, take a look at this in your own life and you'll see it for yourself. You've been in situations where you want to have the urge to really say something. But on the other hand, it's, maybe I should listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
But many times people will just, and this goes back to what you were saying about that quote-unquote sexist thing, that many times people will not take the step back and listen because they feel if they remain quiet that they don't care. And I can tell you right now, people will pick up that when you do take that step back, that you do care and you listen, because people know when they're listened to versus when they're heard. There's a big difference. There is a big difference. And they'll know, and they'll pick it up in their subconscious. With what you were just saying in terms of it just listening to someone, and then later you can, as I like to say, download all of what they were saying, the wisest thing to do is to do just that, is to just listen, be quiet, and just, because like I said, the person will pick up that you're listening to them. You don't have to say anything now. You can come back later and talk about it later with that person, and which will show even more that you care about them.
Exactly, because you've had time to go back and go, what I heard the first time might have made me wince a little bit or go, what? But now put it in the greater context of what was being said and what I'm actually thinking now, that's a whole different proposition. So I like that idea a lot. In fact, I do my best to practice it.
Yeah, and it really is. It's a day-in, day-out habit. And it's a really great habit to have.
Well, I don't think it's something that comes intuitively to too many of us. I think it's something that we have to become aware of and to, like you say, day in, day out, remind yourself, look, I'm not here to mouth off. I'm here to actually be of assistance. And I can be of assistance if I'm kind of shutting up.
Yeah, and just think, silence is golden.
Isn't it, though? I'm telling you, it is. That's a whole other story. Okay, so let's talk. I've got a ton of questions for you, and I know we've only got an hour. We're about 20 minutes into that already. Okay, so when you decided to change your life, Chaney, look, I know a lot of people go, yeah, we hear these stories. You know, oh, you did this, and then you went for this. But nobody really kind of hears the backstory. You know, what happened? What were your thought processes? What were some of the hardships that you encountered? What were some of the truly glorious things that you encountered while you were making it, this, you know, this is a pretty profound change to go from one industry into another. So do you mind sharing a bit of that story?
Absolutely. And I alluded to some of it before. I was in fitness and I transitioned over, which at some point I knew was going to happen. I just didn't know exactly when. Well, the when part of it was 10 years ago, 2006, and I met a guy who was, I was living in New Jersey. I was in New Jersey, and he lived in California, San Diego area. He had a fitness studio, and he had started it on his own, and he was looking for a partner, so he asked me to be his partner. So I agreed. I don't want to say naive about it, but you could say that. I'll admit that. I have no problem with it at the time. And I moved out to California. I gave, part of the deal was to give him $75,000. I gave him $30,000 of it, and I was there for 2 weeks, and I got a gut feeling that said, no, get out of this. So I backed out of it, and I ultimately went back to New Jersey 8 weeks after I got out to California. I mean, it was to a point where by the time my stuff got out there from the movers, I was calling the movers up to do my move back to New Jersey again. It was rather ironic. But anyway, I never got my money back. And
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, so $30,000 plus the moving expenses, traveling and all that. It turned out to be about $50,000. But here's the thing. I got back, and this was in, I got back in November of 2006. And what happened was, it's interesting because I still remember the whole trip back. I was talking to an attorney. I was looking to get my money back, and it was pretty obvious I wasn't going to get it back. So at least I had the four and a half days in the car to really reflect on it and to really look at, well, what's the next step that I'm going to take in my life, because I knew a life-changing event was taking place in that moment. It wasn't one of those things I just realized later on. I knew it was going on as I was, in that case, driving, as you know, I was living it. So I get back to New Jersey, and I still remember I was sitting Thanksgiving night. I was, you know, of all nights, and I basically wrote this guy an email, and, you know, I very easily could have gone off on him and got angry because I was, it, you know, I felt the guy ripped me off. I felt he deceived me. I felt he betrayed me, all that stuff. But I also knew that if I would have held on to those feelings about him, that it would have ran my life. So basically what I did was,
he would own you.
Yeah. So yeah. I looked at it, and I talk about this in my book. I call it the looking glass person, which is nothing more than, you know, looking at somebody else, because that person was reflecting back to me what was going on with me. So I saw him as betraying me, as misleading me, as taking advantage of me, as let's say, taking advantage of me being naive. And I looked at, well, where did I do that in my life to other people? Not in the same way. I mean, I didn't take anybody for, or quote-unquote, someone say, rip someone off for $30,000. I didn't do that, but there were different ways. Like, I would come across people, they'd be having a conversation. Well, where did I rip off their conversation? Where did I interrupt them? Just things like that. I saw what I saw in him, where did I have it in me? And I took responsibility for that. And that really made a big difference, because that really shifted not only my perspective on what happened, but it also, ultimately, like I said, I transitioned into personal development and self-help as a result of that. And the other thing that I did was I looked at, well, you know, how did what this guy did, or what I perceived him as doing, how did it benefit me? How did this guy getting $30,000 off me benefit me? Well, it helped me transition into an industry that I'm still in that I love doing. It got me to be more business savvy. It got me to take greater risks. I wasn't afraid of taking risks. I mean, I laid out all that money. And it just, it gave me more, in essence, more of a confidence in dealing with high-pressure, high-level type situations. So after realizing that, I did not write the guy. I wrote the guy an email, and I said, thank you. I didn't forgive him. I thanked him for the experience.
Right, right.
Because it benefited my life. Because had I would have done that with him, I believe he ultimately went out of business with it anyway. So it would have wasted more time for me. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now, most likely. And if I did, everything would have got bumped back. It's like the whole Back to the Future thing, the space-time continuum, if you will. And it was a blessing. And to this day, I still look at it like that, because I'm glad that happened. And I know it sounds rather unlike what most people would think, but I never let it run my life. I moved on, and I see it as a blessing.
Well, I what I'm hearing from you, Chaney, is that you were able to take it and then reflect it back, like you said, in the looking glass, and discover where you had these kind of cracks in the glass, so to speak, or these, you know, parts of your traits or personalities that just were not serving you, and that once you identified those, I'm going to guess that you were probably far more able to identify those in other people and walk off. So
well,
I would think that would be a side product of it.
Well, it was that, but really, they all did serve me. It's just,
oh,
I didn't realize it at first, because once I saw how, you know, how this guy, quote unquote, betraying me and ripped me off, that served my life. Because he basically, he wasn't aware of it, but it got me to see that, hey, you know, there's something going on with me that I wasn't aware of that woke me up to it. So that served my life. Now, I know most people wouldn't look at it that way, but that's why I teach what I do. That's why I have my Breakthrough to Achieve program. That's why I wrote the book, because it gets people to see that. Because it's very easy to get addicted to the fantasy of it, if you will, that, well, if everything would have gone such and such way, life would have been better, life would have been happier, but when something comes up, what happens? We get upset, we get depressed, and so on. I never had those feelings towards this guy. I wrote an email, and I thanked him. I never got a response from him.
Oh, he didn't know how to respond, and I'm sure he's had his own issues with it since then, so God bless him and move on. But I guess one of the questions that I want to ask you, because you've kind of brought it up yourself too, is that it sounds like you didn't beat yourself up on that ride back across the United States and, you know, dive deep into failure, because so many people do. And you mentioned it, you know, again just now, a lot of people, when they're going through a divorce, they go through the what-ifs, and, you know, if this had been done and this had been done, it's over. Get over it. I have never understood that, I'll be honest with you. You know, once something's done, it's done. That's just how it operates in my world. But I know a lot of people just go into that failure spiral, and it takes them a very long time to pull out.
Well, the interesting thing about the what-if, and there isn't a human being alive that has never gone through that, and I would be willing to bet that, I don't want to say everybody, but most people, even still, because it's only natural for humans to say, well, what if I did blank? What if I didn't do blank? Well, here's a profound question to ask, and this is one of those things to, as you're listening to the show, just listen to what I'm saying, the question, and then after the show's over, when you're quiet, take the time to ask this and really look deep into it. And the question is this: if you could go back and start your life over from the day you were born, now obviously we can't do this because we can't go into a time machine, but perceptually we can do this. But the question is, if you can go back and start your life over from the day you were born and have the exact same things happen again, and you knew that they would happen the exact same way, question is, would you change anything? And that is, I mean, I'm sure you know what most people would answer. They'd say, yeah, I would just
right,
change one thing. But the question is, you know, really, would you want to? And whenever I think about this, now I know these are going to be fictional examples, but I'm using them to make a point. There's a movie, did you ever see a movie called Sliding Doors, Gwyneth Paltrow?
No, I'm not a movie fan. I don't watch TV or movies,
no.
Really. I'm a reader.
That's a good one to watch, because what happens in that movie is she's working, I don't know if it took place in England, but anyway, she's working, she got fired, she goes to catch the subway train to go home, and what the movie does is right before she gets on the train, they split it into like a parallel universe, what happened if she got on, what happened if she didn't get on. In other words, what happens if she made the train, what happens if she missed it. And the movie went back and forth, what happened if this happened, what happened if the other situation happened. I'm not going to spoil the ending, but two entirely different outcomes, and what initially would have seemed like a bad thing, oh my God, she missed the train, actually turned out to be the desirable thing for her, versus had she made the train, it didn't turn out so desirable had she gone down that route. Now, I know that's a movie, but it's the same thing here. The point is, you look back on your life, and instead of looking back and saying, oh my God, I wish this happened, I wish that did or didn't happen, look at those events and say, well, what were the benefits and drawbacks to it? And look for an equal amount, because they're there.
And I was just about to say that. I mean, I look back on my life, and I don't go too far. But look, the rearview mirror for me is for lessons learned. I don't dwell a whole lot of, you know, on the past. It doesn't make sense to me. I'm too logical, I think, for it. But when I do go back and look, I do exactly what you're saying. It's like, well, if I had done something different, what would the impact on me and other people have been? And what were the lessons learned there? And am I going to do that again? And the answer is almost invariably, oh, no, I'm not.
No.
I learned that lesson. Thank you very much.
And you can also say, hey, well, if things would have gone exactly the way I wanted, what would have been the drawbacks to it? What would have been the downsides to it? And there are downsides to it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some people will say, well, that's being negative. No, it's not. It's looking at all situations from a two-sided perspective, because every situation has two sides to it. There's benefits, there's drawbacks, and when you really take the time and look, they equal out.
No, I hadn't noticed that they equaled out. I will have to go take a look.
They do. But it's a matter of looking beyond the quote-unquote obvious. And you don't make this up as you do it. You go and look at it. Now, obviously, it's going to be different for each person. So I can't tell anybody right now as we're speaking what it's going to be. This is involved in the work that I do with people. Let me give you an example. I had a woman. She came into my program, Breakthrough to Achieve program. She, initially, I didn't know this because, believe it or not, she came to me because she was looking to lose weight. And it's just interesting how sometimes I get people who come into the program looking to do one thing, and then as I go through helping them, something else pops up that's the actual issue. Well, in her particular case, I found out that she graduated from Harvard University in education. She got a master's degree also from Harvard. So she had her undergraduate Harvard, master's degree Harvard, and she was going for her PhD. It came out over the time I was helping her that she applied for the Harvard PhD program and she got rejected. And that was really the big issue with her. She had the recommendations. She, I believe, was from Thailand, so she was involved with the Thai community at Harvard, and she was beating herself up. She was seeing herself as a failure.
Not bad.
So I asked her the question. I said, well, what are the benefits to you of getting rejected from Harvard? And this is a sharp lady. She Harvard. And at first she was, not sure. Let me look. And I usually don't get that comment because most people say, well, there are no benefits. But she was wise enough to see that there was something there. So sure enough, she looked. Well, what were the benefits to her of getting rejected? Well, it gave her time to take a step back and reflect. It gave her time to get a little closer with her friends. It gave her time to follow back up with her advisors and approach them from a different way. And she listed a whole bunch of different benefits. I also asked her, well, if she would have gotten into the Harvard PhD program, what would have been the downsides to her of that? Well, she would have been restricted to the Harvard community. She would have been restricted in doing certain things that she particularly didn't care for doing. You know, it was that kind of stuff. She listed, I think she had about 15 or 20 different ones. But the point is, I got her to see that there were two sides to that. And it gave her a chance to really take a step back, and she said, well, you know, I'm going to take a step back and look at applying elsewhere. It gave her more freedom is really what it ultimately ended up doing. So, again, you take a situation where you feel that you're beating yourself up over, look at both sides of it, and I know it sounds very simple, and it is. It's just a matter of taking the time to do it, and it's worth taking the time to do.
Do you find that people don't even think to take the time to do it? They're too busy in reaction mode?
Well, I would say yes. Well, yes, I agree with that. And there's a deeper reason for that, because the thing is, most people are addicted to pleasure over pain. People, I mean, there's this, people want to have pleasure and they want to avoid pain. And that's really the source of all that. And it's nothing bad about anybody. It's just a matter, I like to call this an awareness thing. It's becoming aware of this, understanding it. And then, as I like to tell people whenever I do my radio show or whenever I'm on a show like this, it's one thing to listen to what I'm saying here, but in a way, don't take my word for it. Bring it into your own life. Bring it into your day-to-day activities, your situations, and make it work for you and see how it works in your life, because it's there. It's going to be unique according to your particular situation and the people that you're around.
Right. Listen, one of the hardest things for people is to sit down and, you know, do that old, what is that old cop and robber show where they would shine the white light in your face. You know, they have the guy manacled across the table and they're, talk right now, and that white light is in your face. It's hard to do that. It's hard to sit down and shine that white light in your own face and be very honest. But truly, I think it's something that we need to do frequently. It's tough. It is tough. And it hurts sometimes. And sometimes you're like, oh, well, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was. Woohoo! But I think it should be part of our spiritual exercise, if you will. Or it should be part of our consciousness. It's just to take a deep dive into what we're doing, why we're doing it, what worked, what didn't work, and, you know, what's going to happen next.
That's really interesting. Just this as I say this, and each person listening can do this as well. Take a look at different situations in your life. It could have happened a year ago, a month ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Look back on it, and then look at today, and look to see if, you know, if it was one of those situations where, geez, you know, it really wasn't as bad as I thought it was. Back then I did, but when you look back at it now, geez, you know, it really wasn't that bad after all. And it actually served a purpose in my life.
That's exactly right. And I do that quite a bit, because things that have happened in the past, or that I did in the past, or other people did that I might have been drawn into, man, they smarted at the time. And now I look back and go, what was the angst about? The angst served a purpose, no question about it. But now I'm like, you know, I've got other things to worry about. I need cat food. I've got to go to the grocery store. Just throw it off.
Yeah, I'm a big believer, and it's not really about I'm a big believer, but I certainly feel for each person that it's a very wise thing to look back in your past, because many people want to just sweep it under the rug, suppress it, repress it, whatever word you want to use for that. It's wise to look back in your past, and at any situation, and look at it from both sides, the benefits, the drawbacks to it. You don't want to live in the past. You don't want to hang on to it, because, you know,
no,
it goes that way as well. But you want to look at your past. You don't want to discount it. You just look at it as stepping stones on your path to really helping you become the person that you were put on this planet to be. And rather than trying to get rid of that, embrace it, be thankful for it, and see it for how it served your life.
Mm-hmm. And I do, like I said earlier, I look to my past for clues. I look to my past for lessons. I don't wallow in it. It's in the past. But I don't throw it away.
Yeah, because there's even a balance with that as well.
Okay, so, go ahead. I'm sorry, did you have an example for that?
Oh, no.
Okay. One of the things that people, when they're getting ready to make that kind of seismic shift in their life, and for some people it is a seismic shift, are there any kind of tips that you can offer people? Let's just, as an example, say, okay, I have a job, but I just don't want to do this anymore. You know, the economy's down, everything's tough at work. I want to go be the entrepreneur that I always knew I could be, whether it's a virtual assistant, a web developer, a coach, whatever it's going to be. Maybe you're going to start a knitting barn. It could be anything. And I've known people who have done that and done really well. But there's some real fear associated with that. Is there any kind of assistance that you can give people to say, look, you know, this is how you shift your thinking. This is how you do it.
Well, this is a whole idea about what I like to say is taking risks. And no matter how you look at it, whether you're working that job that you may not, most likely don't like, or you're about to embark on your entrepreneurial career, whatever that is for you, the risks are going to be there either way. And not only that, but you're going to have, again, both sides. You're going to have the pleasures and pains. You're going to have the people supporting and challenging you. You're going to have people who are going to like you and dislike you. And you're going to have the quote-unquote ups and the quote-unquote downs. You're going to get it no matter how you look at it. Let me give you a really good example of this. And just let me give a little backstory to this. I used to live in South Carolina, and I would drive up to New Jersey around Christmas time. So this
now,
was back
you don't sound like you ever lived in South Carolina.
No, I don't.
You didn't pick up the accent at all.
Nope. And if I try to wing it, it's not going to sound pretty. But anyway, well, no, maybe it will. Anyway, so first time I drove up there was in the end of 2010. And I left because my thinking was, all right, I know Washington, D.C. has a lot of traffic. And Washington, D.C. was about 8 hours away. So I figured, all right, I'm going to leave at night. And I'm going to drive up, and I'm going to get to Washington, D.C. about 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to blow right through that traffic. There's not going to be anybody there.
You mean when rush hour starts?
Right. So I get up to Fredericksburg, which is about 40 miles south of Washington. So we're talking about a good 40 minutes outside of Washington. 5 o'clock. Actually, it was a quarter to 5 in the morning, between quarter to 5 and quarter after, like right in that time frame. I have never seen so much traffic in my life, and I've been in L.A., I've been in all these different cities. I could not believe at a quarter to five, 5 o'clock in the morning, 40 miles outside of Washington, I was sitting in a pile of traffic to a point where I had to stop and shut the car off on I-95.
Now, you've not driven in Atlanta, apparently.
No, I haven't.
Oh, well, you're in for a treat.
I'm sure this can apply in major cities, but I experienced it in Washington and this, D.C., and obviously I'm bringing this up for a very good reason, because while I was driving, I was thinking to myself, okay, well, if the traffic is here because people are driving to their jobs. Since they're driving to their jobs, they don't own their own business. And since they don't own their own business, that means that they didn't, in, for whatever reason, want to take the risks or take the jump or just didn't want to go through the fear of what would happen if they went into business and it didn't work out. So, in essence, and again, this isn't saying anything bad about anyone, they took the quote-unquote safe way out, get a job. So what comes along with getting a job? Well, you're commuting to work. Well, what comes along with commuting to work? The traffic. So you have someone who's working a job, and again, I'm using Washington, D.C., this can apply anywhere, person's driving to work versus person who's got their own business. Well, let's take a look at the benefits and drawbacks in that. Person has a job, benefits are, well, they're getting a pretty much a guaranteed income, they got set hours, when they leave their job, they go home, they don't have to, you know, their superiors, their bosses can deal with all the other administrative crap, they don't have to deal with it. You know, you get the idea, they get those kind of benefits. Well, what are the drawbacks? They're sitting in traffic at 5 o'clock in the morning, and probably when they're coming home, at 5 o'clock at night or 4 o'clock at night. So, and obviously drawbacks, dealing with a boss, doing something you don't like, etc. So that's those sets of pains and pleasures at having a job. Well, let's take a look at the person who goes into their own business. The person goes into their own business. What are the benefits? They don't have to sit in that traffic. They can make their own hours. They, if they're really good at what they're doing, they can dictate their income. They have more flexibility, more freedom, etc. What are the drawbacks? Well, the guaranteed income, getting the business off the ground, dealing, you know, they're on a 24-hour clock, and those of you who are in business, you, for yourself, you get the idea. So I'm bringing this up for a reason, because no matter what you do, you're going to have different sets of pains and pleasures, supports and challenges, people praising and criticizing you. So the whole idea is, when you're taking risks, these are things to consider, and it's going to come down to what it is, how big of a why do you have? Because when you have a big enough why and you see both sides of this, then you decide, well, you know, which way do you want to go? And either way is not wrong or right. It's just going to be based on you, what's most important to you, and what you are really willing to put up with in pursuit of your purpose.
And you know, those whys change all the time. I don't know about you, but I don't do New Year's resolutions. They just don't work for me. They don't work for a lot of people. Let's be frank about that. But
I call them new day resolutions, because you do them every day.
I know. But every year I open up my Evernote, which I'm in there all the time, Evernote. But I look at all my whys for the past year, and I'm able to cross a lot of them off because I am working on them daily. And then I come up with new whys. You know, why am I doing what I do? Why am I creating this new website? Is it really something that was just a whim, or is there a real purpose for it? And once I start breaking out those whys, it's amazing how productive I can get, and how I can kind of shift my thinking around and the emotions attached to my thinking, because there are emotions. I mean, I am a business person, but, you know, I get emotional as well on occasion. And, you know, we do the things, you're right, for pain and pleasure. I would prefer far more pleasure than I do pain. So I'm trying to analyze my risk, and I'm trying to analyze what is the cost of doing this or not doing this. And I may spend a week or two in January, and I am going through that why list like a crazy person, but it's how I function for the rest of the year.
That why list is that your why list drives what you're willing to put up with and where you're willing to do it, because you're going to get the pains and pleasures no matter what. Like I said,
Jenny, you're breaking up real bad. Did you move? You're breaking up.
How about now?
Say something better, much better.
Okay. Yeah, you're going to get
Okay, I have no idea, but we're losing you. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead and repeat that, because I heard you're going to get, and then you just cut off.
Yeah, no matter what you do, you're going to get the pains and pleasures, people supporting and challenging you, and you're going to get praise and criticism no matter what you do. You may as well do what you love. And when it comes to turning your life around, that's where it really starts.
Well, it really does. And yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you about, too, because I think a lot of people, when they say, oh, I'm going to turn my life around, yet they're probably thinking it's something to do with I need to lose weight, or I need to stop smoking, or I need to stop these, you know, kind of habits that I've picked up over the years. That's not necessarily it, is it? Although I think that's part of it. I think turning your life around can be just saying, I don't want to work in Washington, D.C. anymore. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I am unemployable, and those are different words, unemployable. And I made myself that way many, many years ago because I don't play well with others. I don't want to be in an office. I run with scissors. Yeah, I have no filters. I'm very willing to say something that's probably going to be unpalatable to the next person standing, you know, next to me. So these were decisions that I had to make, and that's where I changed my life around, was deciding I will never, ever work in an office with somebody where I have to, you know, commute or pick up dry clean. It's not for me. It doesn't suit me. Once I made that decision and changed my life around, oh, my God, I'm a much happier person.
Yeah, I mean, it's a matter of, you know, you're wise, and like I always like to say, it's, you know, what is it that you love to do? What is it that inspires you? What is it that you choose to be doing versus what you have to be doing, what you're supposed to be doing, what you must be doing, what you need to be doing? Big difference, because I don't know anybody who gets up in the morning and says, I have to go to my job. No, it's, oh, God, I got to go to work. Versus when you're doing something you love, you're not going to say, I have to go and speak today. No, it's, I love speaking today. I'm inspired to be doing a speech in front of 5,000 people today. The big difference in the energy, and that really drives the why. And just let me also say this, because there may very well be people listening who are working a job that they don't like, and they're thinking, geez, you know, well, what can I do in the meantime? Well, it goes back to what we were talking about a little while ago. If you're in that job, you don't like it, just take a look at your job, just look at everything that you do there and say, well, how is this benefiting me in what I would love to do?
Well, there you go. I'm sorry. I have my phone next to me because my brother's in the hospital, and I have to have my text on. Otherwise, you would not hear that noise, so I do apologize. So, when do people, how do they do kind of a risk assessment? I'll be honest with you. When I decided to move out of corporate or owning my own brick-and-mortar business into be a, you know, work-at-home, dedicated office entrepreneur, I didn't do a risk assessment. I didn't. I had just had enough, and I went with my gut, and it worked. Thank goodness.
Yeah, that's the key thing you said there, going with your gut.
I went with my gut. So let's talk about that a bit, because I know you talk about that in your book.
Yeah, I call it, well, let me share a story. Did you read the story in the book?
Not yet.
Oh,
I have downloaded
it,
and it's on my weekend reading list.
Okay. I was living in South Carolina. This was in 2013. It was right before I moved out. I moved out January 2014. This is about 6-7 months before I moved out. I go
but
into
I know,
Whole Foods.
Hang on. Sorry, but I know this because I scanned the book. You know, I kind of flipped through it. So, you know, I'm not talking off the top of my head here.
Okay. So I go to Whole Foods because I went to Whole Foods a lot, maybe five times a week. It was only about a mile up the road. So I go into Whole Foods this one particular day, and I go down the cereal aisle, and I see some guy in there. Guy says hello to me. I don't think nothing of it. I go over to where the salad bar is and the prepared foods, and lo and behold, this guy is standing next to me again. I don't think anything of it, but that's twice. I get online to pay for my stuff. Guess who's in front of me? The same guy. So he sees this. He says, okay, this is the third time we've come across each other. We're destined to talk. And I was thinking really one of two things. The first thing I was thinking is that this guy might be trying to pick me up, and I wasn't going for that. But as I was paying for my groceries I saw what he was getting into, and I said, okay, hold on, let me pay, because when I pay for my food, I like to make sure, you know, when I pay for things, I want to make sure they do it right. So I paid for it. I said, well, let's talk about this outside. So we go outside, and he is trying to sell me on his religion. It was some Catholic, I don't know what it was, and I told him, I said, look, I said, in all due respect, I said, first of all, I said, I'm Jewish. I said, the last time I set foot in a synagogue, I was 13 when I had my bar mitzvah. I haven't been in one since. Not really into the religion thing. It's not you and your religion. It's just I'm not into that. You know, I'm sure what you're doing is great. I said, to me, it's about respecting, appreciating, and just being grateful for having people in your life. So I was telling him this, and then then we parted. I started walking one way, he started walking the other, and he says, let me ask you something. I said, sure. He says, do you believe in God? And I'm the kind of person I am. I'm a quick thinker, on my feet. If I get hit with a question that comes out of the clear blue, I just have an ability to spontaneously come up with an answer. My answer to him was, every person has their own God within them. And I call that having your inner God. And I talk about this in my book. And really what it's all about, it's trusting your gut, your intuition. I also call it your inner God. It's independent of, you know, if you're a religious person, whoever you believe in, that's great. I respect that. But I call this your inner God and trusting your gut. Because even if you do have, if you belong to the church or you pray, whatever your religion is, the bottom line is, your inner God, your gut has the final say. And it's real wise.
Well, I agree with you.
It's really wise to go with that, because the thing is, so many times people go against their gut and then they say, well, I should have done this. And your gut is usually not a rational kind of thing. You'll get these responses that they'll just say, well, just go and do it. And then your mind kicks in and says, what? And then the fear comes. So I like to use the coming from your inner God, and I can thank this guy for trying to, you know, get me into his religion, and he asked the question that just, I call it the inner God, and it's trusting your gut, and when it comes to turning your life around, that's what we're talking about here, the one thing that I would say is the most important thing, along with what I was just saying about seeing things from both sides in life, go with your gut, because when you're able to see life from both sides equally, you see those.
Okay, we lost you again for a bit there. Cheney, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know what's going on. I keep losing you for just brief moments. What you're saying makes perfect sense to me, though, because have you ever read a book by Pam Grout called E Squared?
No, it sounds like a cool title, though.
Oh, it's a great book. It really is. But I'm pretty sure it was her. It was either her or Sonia Choquette, but one of them made the point, which has stuck with me for a very long time because I think it's so important, is that basically, and I'm just going to paraphrase here, that every breath is a prayer. You don't have to be a religious person. You don't have to belong to any kind of denomination, but you do have to have faith in something. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm like you. My faith is in my gut. It's within me.
Exactly.
I know where it's coming from, and I listen, and I listen very carefully. And I'll be honest with you. I'll be just clocking along. I may be in the shower. I may be making a gumbo. It's Mardi Gras here. It's gumbo time. And all of a sudden, an idea will literally, and this is how I envision it, just because it's fun, an idea will just kind of float out of the sky and drop down through the top of my head, and I will leave that stove and just go back to my office and write it down because it was so stinking brilliant. And I know I didn't think of that idea. Somebody gave it to me, and I'm always very grateful, and I act on them, if that makes any sense at all.
It does, and that story reminds me of something that Albert Einstein used to do. Now the story goes like this, that he came up with a lot of his ideas when he was in the shower. So he,
but we all, I mean, that's my think tank, that and my spa tub.
Well, what he did, he invented a waterproof pen and tablet, hung it in a shower, and just
I need one.
Okay,
repeat that because I'm not hearing you at all.
your smartphone sitting off, not in the shower, and you can just record
it. Nice. I'll tell you, I have learned to pay attention to those little thoughts that just drop from the heavens, so to speak, because they're almost always spot on. Every once in a while I'll go, really? What the heck was that? But I'll file it away and eventually it'll find a home. But for the most part, I'm like, oh my gosh, I needed that. Now, I don't know about you. This is something that I have done all of my life. When I go to bed at night or when I put myself to bed, because sleeping is not something that is very natural to me, I have to actually make a process. Like a kid, you know, you go to bed, take your bath, get your jammies on, turn the lights out. No, I'm not going to read your story. No, you can't have another glass of water. And I have to, you know, literally process myself to bed, because I don't just lay down and go to sleep. But what I have learned is, just before I'm ready to relax enough to go to sleep, whatever tricky problem is bothering me during the day, and there'll always be some thorny, sticky issue that you just can't resolve, or a question that has no answer, I turn it over to my subconscious for review. And in the morning, I have that answer. So, you know, we as beings are very powerful if we will just take the time to tune in.
Yeah, and, you know, the whole tuning in, I'm going to keep kicking it back to what we've been talking about.
Mm.
One takeaway that I would love everyone to get from what we're talking about here today, and I know I've said it several times, make it a habit in your life to look at all situations and even people from both sides. Look at the benefits and the drawbacks of it in people and situations and even in how you feel about yourself, because when you do that, things are going to come in clearer, you'll tune in a lot easier, you'll come from your intuition, and you'll see a big shift. And it's one of those things that's really intangible until you start doing it and you make it a daily habit. And I'm absolutely certain that by doing that, you'll see a big difference in your life. And if there's any issue that you have in your life that you really want to turn around, because everyone has the answers to the questions. It's just a matter of coming up with the question and being clear enough and tuned in enough to get that answer, and even when you least expect it.
So what can somebody do today to, you know, maybe they're thinking about just doing something completely different. Maybe they're selling a house. Maybe they want to have a family. Maybe they're getting married or don't want to get married. I mean, we have big decisions every day. We have small decisions every day. But what can someone do right now to say, okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to find the courage or the wherewithal or the guts to, you know, do something big in my life, make a change? You know, what would you say to that person?
As simple as it sounds, go back to the basics. I talk about this in the book. And in this case, the basics are revisit for the first time what your mission is, what your vision is, like what we were talking about before. What is your why? And every single person, even those who say, I don't know what I want to do, they know what they want to do. And here's something else to keep in mind. If you find yourself saying, I don't know what I want to do, the only way you can say that is if you're comparing it to what it is that you want to do. So it's a matter of finding what that is. And if you don't know what it is, just go down a line and say, and just look at the different things in your life and say, well, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do this, and just narrow it down, and you will find what it is that you want to do. So what I'm getting at here is go back to the basics. Find out what you would love to do. Find out the why behind it. Take the time to write it out. Revisit or visit for the first time your mission, your vision, and start there. And do what I was saying before, look at life from two sides. And as I know it sounds simple, it sounds basic, it's nothing fancy, it's just a matter of you investing the time in yourself, because you're worth taking the time to invest in. And this is a perfect example of it. It's not being selfish. It's not only is it benefiting you, but you, in fact, part of that why could be, well, why do I want to do blank, whatever it is for you? You can also include in there, well, how is it going to help my family? How is it going to help the people I care about most? How is it going to serve humanity? How is it going to help my friends? You get the idea. So these are just ways to go about it. Very basic, it's basic stuff, but it works. It's just a matter of taking the time to do it and making it work for you.
And once you start writing it down, you know, whether you're an inveterate list maker like I am, my lists are color-coded. They're gorgeous. You ought to see them. That's that A-type personality speaking right there. But once you start writing it down, whether it's in a composition notebook, whether it's in Evernote on your tablet, whether it's a Word document, whatever it is, your diary, your journal. I happen to use an online journal. It's not an online journal. It's a digital journal that I get from David Gott from davidrm.com. Cost me $49, and I'm telling you, I keep my brain in there. It's an amazing thing. But if you start writing down those whys, then you expand it out to your bucket list and how you can help other people, like Janie just said. It's really amazing. But Janie, what do you think about making this, you know, kind of almost like a meditation practice or an exercise practice, making it a daily practice in your life?
Yeah, absolutely, because I do it now. I come up, well, why do I want to do blank? And I go through a bunch of different things. Come up with enough whys, the hows pretty much take care of themselves. Because everyone's
they
focused
really
on the how. Have a big enough why. Have it be true to you. Have it be something that is heartfelt. That's your mission, what you were here to do. And people are going to pick up on it, and I'll just say it anyway, you'll attract those situations into your life. I know attract is a very cliche word, but that's really the best way to put it here. It's just not sitting there hoping, praying, and wishing, and not doing anything about it. There's many different things that you can do. It really help you along the way.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. You are breaking up, so I can't tell if you're there or if you're still talking. I have no idea. I hope it's not my radio, my telephone line. But anyway, one of the best things that I'm getting out of this conversation is that you can make a daily practice out of just learning who you are, learning why you've done the things you've done, learning how to do new things, how to, you know, create your why. And you're right about attracting. Look, the things that are attracted into my life stun me on a daily basis. I'm not kidding you. I mean, at the end of the day, I am often just going, whoa, wow, where did that come from? And it's increasing as my why grows stronger and my deeper reach into why I'm doing the things that I do grows stronger. They come into your life when they're supposed to. But you have to be conscious of why you're doing the things that you're doing, so those people are very clear on why they're either joining you or helping you.
Yeah, it's a matter of living according to, as I like to say, your truth and what it is that is true to you, because that's when you'll bring those people into your life. They don't come into your life by accident. There's a reason people come into and go out of your life.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Well, listen, Janie, where can people find you on the web, and where can they find your book?
Yes, they can pick up the book at and here's the book title. It's becausethisisyourlife.com. So it's becausethisisyourlife.com. That's the book. My website's www.chaneyweiner.com. The book's also on the site, too. I will say this. If you buy the book, if you get it from me, it's free. You just pay the shipping, which is $7.95. If you get it from Amazon, $17. But you get the video series from me. That's about being focused. What does it take to stay focused? So I encourage people to pick that up and read it, because it's, you know, I'm saying it, I wrote the book, but even if I didn't, it's a fascinating book, and it's certainly worth taking the time to read. In fact, the way I wrote the book, it's a 354-page book. The way I wrote the book is you can pick up the book, go to any chapter, and it's going to fit into something that you're doing in your life. It's not one of those that, you know, you got to read it from, I want people to read the whole book, but I know people are strapped for time, but you pick it up and you just pick out a chapter and go, and it'll help you in your life.
Well, thank you for that. You also have a podcast.
Yes, that's my radio show that I do on Tuesdays, and that's called Beyond the Law of Attraction. So check that out as well. If you just go on Blog Talk and put my name in, I'm the only person there with that name, it'll come up.
I'm the same thing. Nobody else has my name either. Well, a few people do, but they're not doing the things that I do. Janie, thank you so much for being with me here today. It has been wonderful chatting with you. I've really enjoyed it, and I know our audience enjoyed the takeaways and the examples as much as I did. And everybody, the show will be available for download in about an hour, and you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Janie Weiner, and I will see you next week. Janie, thank you.
Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.